disproportionate. In other news from Egypt, a court has ordered the release of longtime President Hosni Mubarak, who has been in detention for more than 2 years following his resignation in 2011.
British police are examining new information about Princess Diana's death. Scotland Yard announced on Saturday that detectives had begun checking the relevance and credibility of information, which is reported to include allegations of military involvement. The British government said on Tuesday the police must act if someone is in possession of highly sensitive stolen information. Britain's Home Secretary Theresa May made the comment in connection with the David Miranda case, the partner of Guardian newspaper journalist Glenn Greenwald, who has broken stories about electronic surveillance from information leaked by US whistleblower Edward Snowden. Mr. Miranda was held at London's Heathrow Airport for 9 hours on Sunday.
With shrapnel in my chest, all Vietnam, you took my heart and mind. All Vietnam, you made me old before my time.
And hello, if you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
A doctor with a practice way downtown, instead of standing here in blood on the killing ground. I'd like to be an RN in a quiet nursing home, instead of with the wounded hearing them scream and moan. I'd like to be an actor in a film about Vietnam, instead of in this hole with a punji stick to my arm. I'd like to be a hippie thinking love will prevail, instead of a grunt with an attitude locked in the long bin jail.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
I must confess that that dream that I had that day has at many points turned into a nightmare. Now, I'm not one to lose hope. I keep on hoping. I still have faith in the future. But I've had to analyze many things over the last few years, and I would say over the last few months. I've gone through a lot of soul-searching and agonizing moments. And I've come to see that we have many more difficult days ahead, and some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism. And I think the realistic fact is that we still have a long, long way to go, and that we are involved in a war on Asian soil, which, if not checked and stopped, can poison the very soul of our nation. I'm not going to say that all of our problems will be solved if the war in Vietnam is ended, but I do say that the war makes it infinitely more difficult to deal with these problems. When a nation becomes obsessed with the guns of war, it loses its social perspective, and programs of social uplift suffer. This is just a fact of history, so that we do face many more difficulties as a result of the war. It's much more difficult to really arouse a conscience during a time of war. That is something about a war like this that makes people insensitive. It dulls the conscience. It strengthens the forces of reaction, and it brings into being bitterness and hatred and violence. I think the biggest problem now is that we got our gains over the last 12 years at bargain rate, so to speak. It didn't cost the nation anything. In fact, it helped the economic side of the nation to integrate lunch counters and public accommodations. It didn't cost the nation anything to get the right to vote established. And now we are confronting issues that cannot be solved without costing the nation billions of dollars. Now, I think this is where we're getting our greatest resistance. They may put it on many other things, but we can't get rid of slums and poverty without it costing the nation something. I feel that nonviolence is really the only way that we can follow, because violence is just so self-defeating. A riot ends up creating many more problems for the Negro community than it solves. You can, through violence, burn down a building, but you can't establish justice. You can murder a murderer, but you can't murder through violence. You can murder a hater, but you can't murder hate. And what we are trying to get rid of is hate and injustice and all of these other things that continue the long night of man's inhumanity to man.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
You guys have no
jurisdiction
here. Indian land! You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Rindigina.
Radio Intelligente Rindigina.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. White man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
For the hemisphere, CEO's here to get wrecked for the year. Yeah. A large man's appetite, blowing like dynamite. If it ain't rough, it ain't right. Come on.
Listen to me carefully. No, you don't. Kiss my Obama, as I said. I don't give a damn what you do. I know what I'm going to do, and I know what people with an I and a Q are going to do. The left, which is godless and serves Satan, has an agenda. To accomplish their agenda, they have to get idiots, morons, numbnuts, to do stupid things so the focus will be on them and not on the libs and not on the left. Jews, homosexuals, blacks, gays, Islamists. You may think they're disparate groups. They're not. They're all tools. Because while we're mad at these two punks, we're mad at Trayvon Martin, that thug that deserves to be dead, and I'm glad he's dead. Pieces of crap, homosexual like that. What's that one guy's name? Savage. That faggot. That horrible, awful, terrible excuse for a human being. Who's at the White House promoting attacks on Christians? I hope he dies. They probably will. Of every disease known. By the way, I'm sending him a fire hydrant for his birthday. I'm hoping he'll sit on it. He'll slide all the way down to the ground. Sorry, fire hydrant fans. Don't mean to insult fire hydrants. At any rate, do you understand what I'm saying here? These groups are being recruited. Environmentalists, nuclear freeze. It doesn't make any difference what group it is. If you put anything ahead of doing what's right in God's eyes, or better yet, ignoring the reality of God, then you're a tool. You're a useful idiot.
C'était Dizen et Dizen de Radio.
Internet radio for smarter original.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian. Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neofascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths and love and solidarity to the original entire family at this time of strife and struggle. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, and I'm here, as always, with our executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales. And, what's today's mathematics? You know, whether you are of knowledge or of not, you know, today's mathematics is chaos, as always. You know, no matter how you look at it, it's complete chaos, as always. And now, the chaos that I'm talking about is we have a tripartite confusion paradigm going on right now. While everyone's looking at Miley Cyrus doing whatever it is they call that move on Alan Thicke's son. And hey, Canada, how do y'all look at this? You know, two white folks who take all of the negative aspects of African-American culture, of African-American entertainment and street culture, and they act like complete fools. So about 60 to 70% of the news media has been looking at that. In the meantime, you know, a little before that, they were talking about it was going to take about a fortnight before they were going to more than likely intervene in Syria because of this new allegation about chemical weapons, yeah? Okay. So while everyone's looking at Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus gyrate and do whatever it is that they do now in popular music, which is basically white folks acting like black folks. But, you know, we've been seeing this for the longest. I mean, Al Jolson did exactly the same thing. I mean, in his private life, yeah, he hung out with African folks and he did, as a Jew, I don't know how many of you knew he was Jewish, spoke up, in Hollywood against the racism in Hollywood. I mean, this is true, but when it came to making dollars, when it came to working along with the system, he was just as racist as everybody else, and he did blackface. He did blackface all the same. He did blackface all the same, though. You know, he hung out with African people, you know, offstage, but he did blackface all the same. Nah, yeah, I know there was Burt Williams, and he was African, and he did blackface. There was Pygmy Markham, and he did blackface. But eventually, like Step and Fetch It, he came to his senses. He came to his senses, though. You know, it took a while, but he came to his senses. At some point, we all have to come to our senses. So, while, you know, Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus and, you know, Billy Ray, you know, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, Holmes. But, you know, same thing with Alan Thicke, man. You know, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, but, you know, your offspring, you know, is just really cementing the colonialism. You dig what I'm saying? It's cementing the anti-African racism. You know, I mean, I wasn't around in the 50s, but it seems to be what I've studied about the 50s. And I'm not simply talking about African artists. You know, they do the track like in the Five Heartbeats, and then, you know, they put a white group on the album cover. No, see, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, the entire white Negro. You know, I've seen Norman Mailer in the street. You know, the white Negro. All right, read that book. you know, if you are so inclined to understand what the hell is going on here. And I'm not, you know, trying to get caught up in this, but I want to lay out, you know, we're going to deconstruct this. And I want to lay out some foundations here. You know, we're going to lay out some dynamics. Read the white Negro, the hipster. At the same time, read anything that you can find about the mod movement in the UK. Yeah, you got Quadrophenia if you're really lazy, but that's not going to give you the information that I'm talking about. Look at that. When they talk about the white Negro as a philosophy, as an ideology, as a politic, and what you see going on with Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus. Now, the reason I mention, because I really don't give a damn. I mean, none of this stuff is interesting to me. You know, a lot of folks are saying, well, I'm just too old. No, I just don't think that it's music. I mean, yeah, it's music, obviously, but it's not interesting to me. It doesn't say anything. It's not about anything. And it rips off all of the superfluous, nonsensical, you know, pimp this, hold this, all of the stereotypes of the African community of urban African identity I saw in that video that's all over the goddamn place in terms of this whole, you know, gyration act that she did. And, you know, the idea of him being, her being young and he being a family man. Whatever. This is money, and they're going to do, the capitalist class, they're going to do whatever they can, and they are doing whatever they can. They have used this as a deflection, as something else to look at. In the meantime, while they were talking about 2 weeks, a fortnight, that they're going to look at intervening militarily in Syria, while this whole MTV thing was going on, I said this to Lupe. I said, watch this. And exactly what I said happened. They have now sped up the clock on intervention. Now they're saying by tomorrow, today is Wednesday, they're saying by tomorrow they intend to enter, which means they've already had ground troops. They probably had special units in there anyway, just because of the situation. Just because of what the hell is happening. That has to be what the hell is going on. Because we're hearing about chemical weapons, brothers and sisters. We're hearing about chemical weapons, right? And while we're hearing about chemical weapons, everyone is completely ignoring the fact. Even though the information is still available, at least so far. I mean, you know, they haven't knocked it down the memory hole just yet. And, you know, I'm wondering how much longer a lot of this is going to stay. It's going to stay public. But NPR, of all news agencies, otherwise known as National Pentagon Radio, for those of us who understand what the hell is really going on with NPR, I mean, just look at who the hell gives them money. Just look at the situation. Look at who owns National Public Radio, right? Okay, so in any case, and, you know, look at who Bush put in there some time ago to shake it up over there. He put a Republican in there to shake it up. And we see who gets their funding. Anyway, another argument for another time. But this is titled by Elder Peralta. Is it possible the Syrian rebels, not Assad, use chemical weapons? Did you hear what I said, brother and sister? Let me mention that again. Is it possible the Syrian rebels, in brackets here, not Assad, use chemical weapons? By Elder Peralta, August 27, 2013, 8:32 p.m. I don't know the time zone, but you can look it up. Breaking news from NPR. Now, we also have to take into account, there's a lot of things. Excuse me, that break. There's a lot of new things, but in August 28th, 2013, now this is reported on Russia Today, which is, of course, the state news service, and of course, Russia is standing by Syria on this, and the title of this one is, staff writers, the title of this one is Syria Asks UN to Immediately Investigate Three New Chemical Attacks by Rebels. Now, again, this is not the only article that can be found out there like that. the United Nations, as was reported in The Guardian, as was reported in the London Times, as was reported elsewhere, except the U.S., obviously, because I haven't found any links. I mean, maybe the New York Times, but, you know, I don't have a credit card anymore, so I can't use the paywall. I can't get past the paywall. You get what I'm saying? So that means as a, working person, I am out of the loop in terms of what the most important paper, the paper of record, is saying in the Western world. So, you know, because of that, unless somebody else talks about it or reports it, I don't know. Because I think Lupe, you get 10 page views a month or something like that, right? Yeah, it's like 10, and after that, that's it. So, it is what it is. But, there's a few other pieces out there. Monday, the 26th of August, 2013, Syria, the Saudi connection. The prince with close ties to Washington at the heart of the push for war. Of course, that doesn't mean anything, right, brother and sister? That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything, right? And I suppose it also doesn't mean anything that, what is this one here? The UN accuses Syrian rebels of chemical weapons use. May 2013. Do you understand where I'm coming from now, brothers and sisters? So, you know, what is really going down? What is really happening out here? You dig what I mean? What is really happening out here? You know, why is it all of a sudden they're so concerned? You know, this is not the first chemical attack in Syria. Why are they so concerned? And what does this have to do with Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus? Well, in a lot of ways, in terms of propaganda, it has everything to do with them. Because while everyone is paying attention to them, and I don't know where Lupe and I saw this, but they said anywhere from 60, or this person has estimated that from they can see from the traffic flow, that from the news cycle, that anywhere from 60 to 70% of the news was about, or is still about, Miley Cyrus, as opposed to what's happening with the intervention of the West, the UK and the US in particular, in Syria. I do not know where the EU stands on this. I'm not particularly sure where France is on this. I know Hollande is pretty much going to do whatever the hell he's told to do. Yeah, I know he's a socialist, but obviously he's one of those socialists that really, you know, capitalism, there's aspects to it that he really likes. You know, obviously not a Marxist, not a communist. He's a socialist. You know, and I know I just confused a whole lot of people out here, but, you know, if you do the research, I believe you'll figure it out on your own without me having to explain it to you. Now, while everyone is looking at this, and they've sped up this timetable for going to Syria, you know, no one's paying any attention. And then on top of this, you have just today, you have black man number one, Barack Obama. He's addressing the Civil Rights March, King Civil Rights March. And, well, actually, not King Civil Rights March, as opposed to King Civil Rights speech, because he didn't organize the march. Somebody else organized the march. You know, by Rustin, who was a communist, and who lived openly as a homosexual, you know, which was enough to piss off the King ministers, and that whole, you know, Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But he was also sleeping with white men, so that really did it. You dig what I'm saying? And, you know, COINTELPRO had a file on him. Hoover didn't like him at all. Well, he didn't like King either. But, you know, Hoover was in the closet. You know, he and his husband, Clyde Tolson, who not only built the FBI, they went after, just like Hitler, who was another homosexual who was in the closet. All right? Look up Hans Schreck, his driver, and figure out that was probably his last lover. And then look up August Kubitschek, who was, you know, his... That was his man in his earlier days. I mean, Albert Speer and a whole lot of other people have, you know, made this clear. And British intelligence pretty much looked at it this way. And I believe the U.S. OSS, Office of Strategic Services, what became the basis of the intelligence community in the United States, because believe it or not, the United States did not have an intelligence service, not a real one anyway, not until World War II, you know, and then the U.S. had to learn from the British, which I suppose, you know, really still bugs the egos. You know, really, I mean, if you actually look at the history of intelligence, at least in the West, until James Angleton came around, James Jesus Angleton, by the way, I don't know how many of you know this, that, you know, he was Latino, that, you know, the number one counterintelligence man in American intelligence history was Latino. You know, I know folks just think it was just a bunch of white guys. And, you know, maybe because he was Catholic, which, you know, I don't know how that could have helped him, especially back then. But he managed to rise through the ranks during the war, and mostly probably because of his activity in occupied Europe, which we're not going to get into now. But at least to Gladio, go to Wikipedia, look up Gladio, do the research, please. It's out there. But what I'm trying to get, you know, to get to is, we have a lot of hypocrisy and a lot of confusion. Now, for Obama to address the people who are commemorating the 50th anniversary of this March on Washington, which if you follow any of the teachings, the writings and the speeches of Malcolm X, you know that it was a farce. Anybody who was on the real cutting edge, I'm talking about Fannie Lou Hamer, anybody who was really out there trying to do liberation as opposed to assimilation, you know, as opposed to coming from a position of weakness, has pointed out that once they realized what Bayard Rustin and John Philip Randolph were trying to do, and John Philip Randolph was the head of the Pullman Porters Union, and I know if you're not of a certain age, you're not going to remember that, the Pullman train system, you know, that was probably the best job an African could have. And, you know, I just mentioned Malcolm X earlier, he was a Pullman porter. You know, again, it was a solid job, and you got to see different parts of the country. You know, I mean, that's why a lot of black men who went into the military, it's really hard to tell them anything negative about the military or about, well, I mean, they don't talk about war well, but I mean, you know, they usually speak well of the military because for a lot of them, that was the first, you know, three squares, man. You know, you coming out of the South, you got nothing, no shoes in a lot of these cases. I mean, I'm not exaggerating this. A lot of brothers were, you know, they were recruited. They didn't have shoes in Gullah Country. They would send recruiters out there to sign them up. The same thing they would do in reservations or wherever the hell they put their badass Indians, right? You know, the Indians that refused to cut their hair and what have you. They would make them a deal. Either you join the military or you stay here. You know, you stay in the joint or you stay on the chain gang or what have you. Or you stay enslaved working in these fields. So that's what ended up happening. Same thing in Gullah Country. They came down there. People didn't have anything. And they said, look, boy, you know, we're going to go fight for democracy against the Germans. We're going after the Huns. Then, you know, here it is. You don't have a pot to piss in. You got nothing. You know, you're not even really a generation away from slavery. I mean, in Louisiana and in parts of Georgia, slavery never stopped. You know, when Clinton was running, when Slick Willie, Bill Clinton, was running for president the first time, I forget which newspaper it was that I read this in. It might have even been the Times, but I can't remember. They were sharecroppers, no electricity, no running water. They were down there recruiting them to vote for Clinton. And then guess what? Clinton's second term, they were still living without electricity, without running water. And the whole time he was talking about pardoning brother Leonard Peltier, who was still sitting in a white man's prison. But Mark Rich, who just passed away not too long ago in the Netherlands, an embezzler and a friend of Bill Clinton, well, he was pardoned. And one of Clinton's brothers was pardoned. You know, yes, you know, come on. Come on. Bill Ayers, didn't he get a pardon? Bill Ayers of the Weathermen. You know, the group that Fred Hampton Sr. said were just a bunch of radical, crazy, you know, uncontrolled and uncouth, you know, white maniacs, right? You know, the Weather Underground, you know. I'm not saying a lot of them were not serious, but for the most part, you know, I mean, they were serious, I guess. I mean, you can look at the damage that they did, and yeah, you know, they are probably the only white reactionary group in the United States that are actually called terrorists. You know, Eric Rudolph isn't called a terrorist, really. Timothy McVeigh. There are a lot of people that take offense to him being called a terrorist. I mean, all white folks, of course. You know, all Bible thumpers, of course. They're all capitalists, of course. But, you know, come on, how many people in the Senate and in the Congress was speaking well of him? I mean, even Gore Vidal. And, I mean, I understand why he did it. But Gore Vidal actually went out of his way to give time to McVeigh to hear what he had to say. And then you had Ted Kaczynski. Now, yeah, they label him a terrorist, and for good reason. You know, and I know they love to consider him to be on the left, and I suppose in a lot of ways he was, but he was an anarchist who was accusing the right and the left of, you know, just basically ruining the planet and ruining the future, having to ruin the past. So he was against everybody. He was against everybody. So you can't really put him on the left. And I know the Republicans, they love to do this. The same way they just swear that Dr. King was a Republican. He might have registered as a Republican, but he certainly wasn't particularly cool with the Republican platform at the time. And he certainly didn't like the Democratic platform at the time either. I mean, I've said this to people. When I first registered as a voter, I registered as a libertarian. Because on the face of it, it makes sense what they say, you know, in terms of, you know, liberty and freedom and, you know, that kind of thing. But when you actually look at the practice of it, they're hypocritical sons of bitches. They're really paleo conservatives. And like I said this before, you know, they smoke pot, they have gay friends. They're totally liberal in terms of, you know, they want to morally be free to do whatever the hell they want to do. But fiscally, they don't want to give up a dime. They don't want to have to pay for public roads. They don't want to have to pay for public schools, you know. Everybody's just, you know, going back to the 1800s where you just had a plot of land and you lived by yourself and you couldn't even see your neighbor's home. You know, where everybody has, a weapon by the door, what have you, you know, because if you hear, you know, the hoofs of horses coming, you know, you panic because this is just everybody's out to get you. You know, I mean, this is the way the Republicans, this is where the NRA, this is the way the moral majority, this is the way the Christian conservatives talk. So for them to be against this whole Syria thing is a lot of hypocrisy. But the thing about it is, they're not against it. They're all for it. The majority of conservatives are for it, and the majority of liberals are for it. And it amazes me how many people in the African community are for it. They don't understand what the hell is going on. They don't know the issues. They didn't know who Assad was until the day before yesterday, and I'm not exaggerating about that. I spoke to folks. One of them has, I don't know how many goddamn degrees. Not the dumbest person I know. Very intelligent person. But you know what? She went to school, and then after she did that, he married somebody who had more money than her. Not more education, but more money. She doesn't seem to give a damn about the world anymore. And she didn't know who Assad was. And when I reminded her that Barbara Walters interviewed him and his wife. And, you know, I mean, they just gave them glowing praises. You know, she had so much style, and he was so handsome. You know, Barbara Walters, right? The interviewer of the stars. You know, she didn't remember that. She didn't remember, you know, anything. You know, and when I bring up the fact that Syria has always had a neo-Nazi presence, you know, before World War II, after World War II, you know, I mean, that's who the, look, those guys, if they didn't go into the French Foreign Legion, and if they weren't snatched up by the OSS, or they weren't liquidated by the Russians when they caught up to them, or any other communists that caught up to them, or any group of Serbs or what have you, or partisans that caught up to them. You know, they were working for some of the Arab governments that were coming around post-colonial period, or the theoretical post-colonial period, right after the Bandung Conference, you know, after the first one anyway. You know, I mean, NASA in Egypt had hired Nazis. Matter of fact, I believe Reinhard Galen, the bassist, one of the first people that Wild Bill Donovan, who was given the charter to create the CIA under the what, after the OSS, and I forget what the hell was in between that. Look at the history. Wild Bill Donovan, right? Matter of fact, I give you something else, a little bit of trivia a lot of you don't know. The Police, the 80s band, the drummer, Stuart Copeland, his father was one of the co-founders of the Central Intelligence Agency. I don't know how many of you know that, but it's pretty interesting tidbit of trivia, which is why I probably remember a lot of this stuff. But in any case, Mitch Werbel and all of these all of those names, you'll see him when you look it up. What, like I said, Wild Bill Donovan, that's where William Colby got his start. Look, it's interesting. Military history is an interesting aspect of World War II, but like I said, it rolled over into things like Gladio and what have you. And you have to look at that. And you have NASA, who was supposed to be left wing, and I suppose he was in certain aspects. He was post-colonial for sure, but he obviously had no problem hiring Nazis. Well, one, they had the expertise, and they were hiring themselves out independently, I suppose. But they were also reporting a lot of stuff back to Galen, who was reporting a lot of this stuff back to his handlers in the States. So, there's a lot of malfeasance, a lot of cloak and dagger, a lot of shadows. And I would like you to consider the fact that, I mentioned the whole MTV Schadenfreude, but the real thing is, that was a cover. That was a cover. Just like this, this use of chemical weapons right now is probably a cover. I am not denying that an event happened. I'm denying the official story because it doesn't seem to make any sense. You had allegations against the rebels for using this nonsense. And you have to take into account a couple of things. Now, you're going to hear a little bit from Bristol Broadband Community Radio because they can explain this in much more detail than I can. Because frankly, I'm actually tired of the subject. Because we already know what's going to happen. They're going to go in and they're going to tear up Syria. They're going to put in a transitional national council like they did in Libya. And then you're just going to see complete chaos while the oil concessions are signed and everything is sold away. I mean, how many of you who are part of the BDS movement, I mean, how many of you are aware that Mahmoud Abbas has been signing away concessions, oil concessions, land concessions? Now he's saying that if they sign a peace deal with Israel, there'll be no more talk about Palestinian rights, Palestinian right of return, that some of the more reactionary settlements would be allowed to exist. What the hell is going on here? Now, like I said, he's bad. I mean, look, you have the PLO, which after Yasser has just devolved into complete nonsense. And then you have the other half, which only has legitimacy for the simple fact that they were voted into office. But like I said, when you look at the fact that they were created by Israel as a buffer to the PLO, you have to realize that Hamas, like the Muslim Brotherhood, really isn't exactly, anybody who was confused and thought that somehow that they were going to bring in some sort of representative government, no, you're wrong. They were representing nothing but themselves. The fact that they were voted in over Abbas when they were allowed to have an election, because remember, they were told to get political. So they went ahead and they did this. And then, they won, right? And it's not because they won because people really agreed with their religious argument, because that's really what they were running on. It was the fact that Abbas was not representing their goals. He's hugging Olmert. He's hugging Netanyahu. He's having tea with these people. And then saying that, from the 10% that voted for him, that was primarily in the West Bank, that he's speaking for everybody. And in the meantime, he's signing away concessions, what have you. Now, I've said this before, I say it again, and we got audio, and I agree with the member of parliament when he said that Hamas is a deeply nasty organization. They are. And if this religious, conservative, far-right movements, they're a problem. But the problem is, though, the real problem is that they were told to get legitimate, like Hezbollah, and they did that. And now they're being penalized for being political. They're being penalized for being political. Now, like I said, my opposition to them, I'm not a Palestinian. My opposition to them is strictly political, and it's on the religious issue. Because we all know what happens when you have religious organizations get political power. They start to push theocracy. And, you know, I think Palestine needs to breathe for a little while. It hasn't been able to breathe for more than 60 years. It needs to be able to breathe and figure out what it wants to do. And it can't do that if it's going to have pressure from the religious right, and then going to have, you know, equal pressure from the, you know, the white world to accept the Ashkenazi, you know, Zionist position. And I'm saying it like that because they don't give a damn about this Sephardic or Mizrahi brothers. Look up the Israeli Black Panther Party so you can see what the hell I'm talking about. Ask anyone in Israel how Arab Jews are treated. You think they give a damn about the Jewish population in Syria? They'll use that as an excuse for intervention. But they don't give a damn about Jews in the Arab world. They don't give a damn about Jews at all, unless they can be politically used by them as cannon fodder. What you see going on in Israel has nothing to do about Judaism. It's about white colonialism in that part of the world. And Zionism has always been about white colonialism since the beginning. You look up the Uganda Project. You know, Theodore Herzl, and I'm not knocking him. I mean, the same thing with Gandhi. I'm not knocking him, but let's be real. Gandhi was a racist. Gandhi didn't like African people. You know, he didn't like indigenous African people anyway. I don't know how he felt about Arabs, but he definitely did not like Black African people. He did not. He fought against Black African people during the Boer Wars. During the uprisings in the townships. He wrote articles for the Indian Express, the newspaper there for the Indian community when he was residing there, against having to share facilities with Black Africans. So, no, you know, Gandhi got pissed when he was on his way back to India because he was going back to his country, where he felt that he should rule. I mean, that's a legitimate argument. I'm not going against it. But what really got his goat was being kicked off that train or being kicked out of that section by a white man. Then he got pissed because it happened to him. And then when he went to India, he was all down for the revolution. But even at the same time, he upheld all of the Hindu prescriptions against who? Against which ethnic group? In India, the untouchables. Who makes up the bulk of the untouchable class? Who are the Dravidian people and where do they come from? See, I'm talking to somebody out there. I'm talking to somebody out there. These things are complex. These things are complex. These things are complex. I mean, look at Chelsea Manning. Now, you know, I commend her for, you know, trying to do something in terms of what the hell was going on. I mean, obviously, it wasn't an easy choice and what have you. But I have to, you know, I have to say, there's a lot of attention being given to Chelsea Manning in terms of respecting her and not referring to her as Bradley. But CeCe McDonald's still sitting in the joint. And, you know, how many of you are arguing about that? How many of you have anything to say about that? This was a Black transgender person who was living in the prison system as a transgender person, who was defending herself against a neo-Nazi, against an attack by neo-Nazis, actually, that she was actually trying to get away from. She's in prison, and you know, how many of you are arguing for her? She's transgender. She's living transgendered in the prison system in the United States. You know, under Obama now. And how many of you in the gay lobby, I mean, is Obama saying anything about her? But then does he say anything about anybody? See, and this is the other hypocrisy. Here he is addressing the civil rights thing, the 50th. But he's the man, he's the number one man, right? He's the man in charge. He is the Black man in the White House. He's the most powerful African in the world. Born and raised in the United States. And what has he done about stop and frisk? Absolutely nothing. What has his Justice Department done about it? Nothing. How many Black men have died under his watch due to police brutality and malfeasance? What has he done about this? Zero. He boycotts the International Racism Conference twice. He supports the Israelis in what they're doing in terms of genocide against the Palestinians, who are indigenous to that land. He has not done a damn thing about Leonard Peltier or any other Native American interest that doesn't involve capitalism and the exploitation of Native people. He's done nothing for the Native community other than accept honorary tribal membership and what have you and talk a great deal about how much he respects us, but he's done nothing. He's done nothing about institutional racism. Nothing. He's done nothing about mass incarceration. Nothing. He's done nothing about people being profiled in their workplaces. He's done nothing about housing discrimination. He's done nothing about police brutality in public housing. He's done nothing. He's done nothing. And when Trayvon Martin passed, he made a couple of statements because he was forced to. Because he was forced to by public pressure. But in the real, he's done nothing. But if you're a white gay person and you contemplate suicide, or something like that happens to you, or something bizarre happens where you're bashed or what have you, or your rights are violated, well, he can make a video. And he can make a speech. And he can demand that something be done. And he can tell you that things will get better. But he doesn't say that to the black community. He tells the black community to take off your bedroom slippers and get up and do something. Even though there have been black people trying to do something here for a long goddamn time. And people like him have done nothing to help that. Yes, Tom Joyner gave Rachel Gentile a scholarship, but so goddamn what? There's a whole lot of Rachel Gentiles that Tom Joyner doesn't even recognize, doesn't even acknowledge, doesn't see, because if they don't want to become part of the house, he doesn't recognize them. Oprah Winfrey doesn't recognize them. Or Barack Obama doesn't recognize them. Jay-Z and Beyonce don't recognize them because, you know, Jay-Z, his presence is charity. And Russell Simmons, well, you know, Harriet Tubman sex tape. This is the state of black America. This is the state of black America. And this is why Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus have absolutely no scruples about taking the worst of black, you know, culture and putting it on stage, causing a controversy, and the two of them will sell more albums because of this. They will sell more music because of this. I mean, I looked at that video for about a minute or two, and how many of those extras, the backup dancers, were of color, who really had a backside? While this, you know, I mean, come on, brothers and sisters, let's be real. If you're gonna, you know, bounce around like that and pop it like that, don't you actually need to have something back there to move? I saw that on the backup dancers, you know, not on this chick who can't seem to keep her tongue in her mouth. It's like, you know, what the hell? We're paying attention to this, but we're paying attention to this because we know the white people are judging us on this. Because really, that is their vision of us. So for all you Negroes that want to get into the house, including this brother that I'm talking to right now on Twitter, another one who can't see past the white man's rules. They can't see past the white man's privilege. They can't see past the white man, period. Living and suffering in, you know, from white disease. And this is not a personal diss to him or anybody else. But this idea that you can't do anything beyond the white man is exactly why Mugabe is still in power. Mugabe did not dissolve the lines. Mugabe did not dissolve the lines that were created that made Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe, right? Rhodesia. What, you know, Cecil Rhodes created those lines. Did Mugabe dissolve any of that? No. Did any African leader dissolve any of that? No. They kept the exact same military structure. They kept the religions. Isn't he popping Christianity right now? I'm sorry, you Mugabe supporters. You're hypocrites. Christianity, as is practiced in Africa today, the outside of Ethiopia, doesn't have a goddamn thing to do with the black man. You're following the white man's version of a Palestinian faith. You know this. Outside of Ethiopia, there is no claim. You know this. You know this. The same reason why the majority of you, or some of you, practice Islam. Do you even realize why? Because supposedly, according to their religion, one Muslim cannot enslave another Muslim. But they had no problem, though, enslaving black folks, did they? And Tupu Tip, who was African, but because of the social rules, because his father was an Arab, right? His mother was a slave. Because his father was an Arab, he was deemed an Arab. And what did he do? As black as he was, he enslaved as many black people as he possibly could. What happened with Chinese Gordon? I mean, again, you know, it's complex. You know, he took a case of brandy, the Bible, and some troops, right? Victoria sent him in there to the Sudan, right? I mean, you know, what happened to him. And they were claiming to go, you know, up there to stop the slavery, which seems laudable, even though they would have placed their own form of Europocentrism down on them anyhow, which would have just been a refined slavery, you know, the type of slavery that an Englishman could be proud of over morning tea, right? But, you know, who are the Sudanese? Who is the real Arab from Yemen? Where is Yemen? You know, these are black men enslaving other black men because somebody came in with an alien philosophy. If it's not Baudin, it's alien. If it's not, you know, dealing with the ancestral spirits in Africa, it's alien. Brought in an alien belief and told one group of people that it's okay to enslave and brutalize another group of people. And I don't want to hear all these arguments from the RGB crowd out here talking about, well, slavery in Africa was different and it was, you know, wasn't as cruel and it was more humane than what the white man did. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. Now, there's two aspects to this. But I know the majority of these brothers do not understand the aspects. You know, I mean, they're still quoting Albert Pike, right? You know, they quote all the white conspiracies to talk about other white conspiracies, and somehow it's an anti-African conspiracy when it was really just nonsense to begin with, because a white guy was confused in Europe someplace, but you believe what he says. I mean, how many of the RGB people, how many of them listen to Alex Jones? You know, Alex Jones is two beers short of a six-pack. You know, but you follow him anyway. He doesn't support you. I mean, he said some terrible things about the Trayvon Martin case. He said terrible things about Trayvon Martin, but you still support him, right? You still support him. Who was it? What's his name? Because we haven't been playing his PSA, Immortal Technique, yeah, since he showed up on the Alex Jones show. You know, I mean, they're sitting there, I mean, it was just gun porn, sitting there, some big-ass weapon was sitting on the counter before them, and they're just staring at it like I thought they were looking at a woman. And, yeah, so I haven't really looked at Immortal Technique the same after that. That's my opinion, you can do with it what you want. But, you know, yeah, things are complex, and we got to ask ourselves what the hell is really going on. Who are we really, you know, who are we really siding ourselves with when we make decisions? Do we understand what the hell is going on? Do we realize that we're being given slanted perspectives on things? Do we actually go out to look for other angles and perspectives? And you know, do we ask any questions? I'm talking about you and me as individuals, brothers and sisters, and all the conservative lurkers, you know, which I'm noticing a lot of you are visiting the blogs, a lot of you have been listening to the show. I'm kind of confused by that. You know, I'm kind of confused by that because I'm against everything that you cats are about, which is probably why you listen to the show. You know, it's I'm a little confused by that. You know, I'm everything that you don't particularly care for. But, you know, that's fine if you want to, you know, come in anyway. But I just find it strange. I really do. I find it strange. You know, in any case, we're going to move on. And we got some audio for you to review. Get your notepads out. Investigate it. Look up the sources. And you tell me what the hell is happening in Syria. And explain to me how it is legitimate for Barack Obama, who has won a peace prize, even though he's done nothing but war, to then address and claim Dr. Martin Luther King, who said that war was wrong and that his country was one of the most violent on the planet. And that it was hypocritical. And it was racist to his core. How he could justify not just what he's about to do, but everything that he's done since he's been in office, and claim MLK, and the fact that the black community in the United States allows him to get away with this. They morally allow him to get away with this. No, see, I find hypocrisy in that. I find cowardice in that. And, you know, we really shouldn't complain. Because, you know, not that we shouldn't complain. I mean, I will always complain as long as there's something to complain about. And this is something to complain about. We are the only ethnic group, and I'm talking in terms of being an African now. Because I know a lot of people are confused. Yeah, I'm mixed. But I'm saying right now, speaking as an African. You know, Africans are the only ethnic group in the world, man, in terms of, you know, a geographic ethnic identification, right? We are the only ethnic group in the world, especially in the Americas, that we will demean ourselves and we will truly believe that this is progress. We will totally subjugate ourselves and we are totally committed to the idea that this is progress. Where do we get that idea? No other ethnic group in the world. And I'm somebody who walks through ethnic groups on a daily basis because I have no choice. I have my foot in four different communities. No other ethnic group. I mean, in all of the ethnic, all of my background comes from a slave background at that, including my Jewish background. It comes from a slave background. And I'm not saying now, okay, well, kumbaya, right? The Gullah in me. Well, you know, we're all on the same playing field. No, we're not on the same goddamn playing field. See, when the Jews, like, oh, well, we were slaves in Egypt, which really, outside of the Judeo-Christian tradition, there is no evidence of that. There is no evidence that classical Egypt had a massive slave force. There's more evidence, and I'm reading this from rabbis now. There are many rabbis who are writing, who are questioning all of this. There's more evidence that the Jewish population of Egypt were actually used in the military. They were used, which I don't know why people would be offended by that or find that to be strange or shocking or unheard of, when who makes up the bulk of the military in the United States? Who makes up the bulk of the military in every country but the lower classes, but the marginalized? So, you know, before you get angry and pick up a crayon and send me a really nasty email, and again, you know, heads up, the email has changed. You all know why. It's the original email that we used to, when we first, you know, came into this, aboriginalmediagroup@gmail.com. Because, you know, everything's got to go through the Google funnel so they can give it out to whoever the hell asked for it, right? Be they government, be they private concern. Oh, well, we can't tell the difference. So what did Benito Mussolini call that? You know, and a lot of you folks got to get over the idea that fascism is only for white folks. Mugabe? Idi Amin? You know, the white folks who talk that nonsense about Mandinka, you know, about Mandela, they're just, I don't know what color the sky is in their world, but, you know, that's just nonsense. That's like saying that Obama's a socialist and a closet Muslim. That's insanity. That's insanity. This is the whitest black man has ever been in Washington, D.C. I mean, what the hell are you talking about? I mean, Cory Booker might, you know, hey, he might just be able to surpass this. But, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. You know, he's going to be in the Senate soon, so we'll see. We'll see. In the meantime, I guess it's going to, you know, jump off here in Syria. And, you know, for all of the Native and African personnel that are more likely going to be involved in this, you know, try to come home in one piece. In the meantime, the rest of us are going to try to explain to the knuckleheads around us why this is not just a bad move, but something that PNAC has been pushing for a long time, and it's happening under the Obama administration. So those of you who've been talking, you know, peace under this man, and he's doing a good job. Evidently, you're about imperialism, colonialism, and the total capitalist control over the world. So, you know, when things go wrong, I don't want to hear you complain. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned so stations may identify themselves. This is Roger for Intelligent Aboriginals.
Hi, this is Zeshnine from Zeshnine.com, and you're listening to the Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Veteran slavery. When black people like me talk to the slaves, they didn't kill them. They sent some old house Negro along behind him to undo what he said. You have to read the history of slavery to understand this. There were two kinds of Negroes. There was that old house Negro and the field Negro. And the house Negro always looked out for his master. When the field Negroes got too much out of line, he held them back in check. He put them back on the plantation. The house Negro could afford to do that because he lived better than the field Negro. He ate better, he dressed better, and he lived in a better house. He lived right up next to his master in the attic or the basement. He ate the same food his master ate and wore his same clothes. And he could talk just like his master, good diction. And he loved his master more than his master loved himself. That's why he didn't want his master hurt. If the master got sick, he'd say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick?" When the master's house caught a fire, he'd try and put the fire out. He didn't want his master's house burned. He never wanted his master's property threatened. And he was more defensive of it than the master was. That was the house Negro. But then you had some field Negroes who lived in huts, had nothing to lose. They wore the worst kind of clothes. They ate the worst food. And they caught hell. They felt the sting of the lash. They hated their master. Oh, yes, they did. If the master got sick, they prayed that the master died. If the master's house caught a fire, they prayed for a strong wind to come along. This was the difference between the two. And today you still have house Negroes and field Negroes. Yeah. I'm a field Negro.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginals.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Inform yourself about Plan B emergency contraception. Information can be the best protection, especially dealing with asexual assault or unprotected sex. If you are 17 or older, you do not need a prescription to receive Plan B. All Indian Health Service facilities should carry Plan B, but most don't. This is a violation of your reproductive rights. Call your local Indian Health Service unit and ask for Plan B. It is our right as Native women to receive Plan B. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice. End HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination. Get information from your community health center or nursing station, or visit www.caan.ca.
This is FSN reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, The creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
Я скачу, но я скачу иначе. По камням, по лужам, по росе, говорят, он и на ходьбе скачет. Это значит иначе, чем все. Но наездник мой всегда на мне. Стременами лупит мне под дых. Я согласен бегать в табуне, но не под седлом и без узды. Если не свободен нож от ножен, он опасен меньше, чем игла. Вот и я подседланный стреножен. Рот мой разрывают у дела. Мне набили раны на спине. Я дрожу боками у воды. Я согласен бегать в табуне, но не под седлом и без узды. Мне сегодня предстоит бороться с скачки. Я сегодня фаворит, знаю, ставят все на иноходца. Но не я, шокей на мне хребит, он вонзает шпоры в ребра мне. Зубы скалят первые ряды, ох, как я бы бегал в табуне, но не под седлом и без узды. Пляшут, пляшут скакуны на старте, друг на друга слову задая, выступление в бешенстве в азарте. И роняют пену, как я. Мой наездник у трибун в цене. Крупный мастер верховой езды. О, как я бы бегал в табуне, но не под седлом и без узды. Нет, не будут золотыми горы. Я последним цель пересеку я ему. Припомню эти шпоры. Да спою, отдам на скаку. Колокол, шокей мой на коне. Он смеется в предвкушении мзды. Ох, как я бы бегал в табуне, но не под седлом и без узды. Что со мной, что делаю, как смею, потакаю своему врагу я собою. Просто не владею, и я прийти не первым не могу. Что же делать остается мне? Вышвырнуть шокея моего и бежать, как будто в табуне, под седлом, пусть но без него. Я пришел, а он в хвосте плетется. По камням, по лужам, по росе я впервые не был иноходцем. Я стремился выиграть, как все. Я впервые не был иноходцем. Я стремился выиграть, как все.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
Hey, what do you think about this idea? Since we freed the slaves in 1865, don't you think the black race owes the white race reparations? I was thinking like $20,000, you know, per person. I mean, anybody that's not on welfare.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show, Friday Drive Time, with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. WMD again, it certainly looks like a nerve gas attack, but would Assad nerve gas his own people while UN weapons inspectors are touring Syria?
Drive Time on BCFM 93.2.
So Sorry about the pregnant pause there, and thanks very much to former SAS soldier Ben Griffin from Veterans to Peace. But Martin, one of the big stories this week is this one about the chemical weapons, almost certainly does look like chemical weapons were used in Syria. And the question I'm going to pose to you is, why would President Assad and the Syrian government be using chemical weapons? Because we've just heard William Hague today has said that he believes that it was. In fact, he's saying Britain believes, which I find a little bit arrogant of him, representing all the different views in right across Britain, believes that, this sarin gas or whatever these weapons were actually used by the Syrian government themselves, by Assad.
Yes, but I mean, two previous uses of chemical weapons are definitely, according to UN weapons inspectors, carried out by the rebels. And when the Turkish police arrested an al-Nusra Front active service unit operating inside Turkey after a bomb, in a car bomb inside Turkey, they found that they had actually a kilogram of sarin. So the rebels have already used chemical weapons twice. So if Assad is using them, then that'll be the first time he's actually used them. And of course, the Russians are raising questions about this. The rebels in Syria are not nice people. There's a massive exodus of refugees coming out of Syria this week, mostly Kurdish people being driven out by the rebels.
But Martin, the rebels are a ragtag collection of people. How on earth are they going to get their hands on chemical weapons?
Well, they certainly did have chemical weapons when they were arrested inside Turkey. And Carla Del Ponte, who's the UN rapporteur on this, said that we have got evidence of the use of chemical weapons by the rebels. But of course, what the rebels are doing is using chemical weapons, and they've done this twice already, use chemical weapons, say, oh, Assad's using chemical weapons, that's the trigger for NATO intervention. So the question has got to be, why now, why here, why when the UN weapons inspectors arrive in Damascus do we suddenly have chemical weapons? I would not put it past the rebels to have attacked their own people with chemical weapons in order to try and, because they're losing on the ground. Assad has got no motive for using chemical weapons at all, because the Syrian army are basically winning. They don't need to use chemical weapons. And in actual fact, chemical weapons aren't terribly effective, to be honest with you. You're much better off with conventional weaponry. You don't really need to use chemical weapons. If the wind's in the wrong direction, they're no use to you at all.
Well, this is from, we're about to hear from Foreign Secretary William Hague. This isn't the announcement he made today, but it's a little bit early in the week when he's talking about the seriousness of the matter and apportioning blame.
The most urgent crisis anywhere in the world today, the terrible and deepening conflict in Syria. Syria has been a focus, of course, of our talks today. We're both deeply concerned by what is happening to innocent people there. The regime appears to be preparing new assaults, endangering the lives and safety of hundreds of thousands of Syrians who are already in desperate need. And the scale of the regime's repression and the human suffering that it has caused beggars belief. The campaign of murder and tyranny that they have waged for more than 800 days now is not only a moral outrage, it's a grave threat to the wider region, it's a danger to our own national security. And this includes the risks of growing radicalization, the involvement of Hezbollah and Iranian proxies, and credible reports of the use of chemical weapons. So we agreed today that we cannot turn away from Syria and its people. The United Kingdom believes the situation demands a strong, coordinated, and determined approach by the UK, the US, and our allies in Europe and in the region. I hope this will wake up some who have supported the Assad regime to realize its murderous and barbaric nature, a government that cares so little for the lives of the people of its own country.
Well, he's certainly apportioning blame there, isn't he? And he's saying he hopes it will wake up some people, quite clearly referring to the Russians and the Chinese, who've been blocking some resolutions that they've been trying to get through the UN Security Council, Martin. But William Hague, of course, is and always has been, I think since the age of 15, in fact, a member of the Conservative Friends of Israel. He seems to be a little bit one-sided on this, and he certainly tends to take the Israeli point of view.
Yes, well, I mean, the Israelis, of course, carrying out airstrikes inside Syria with no authorization whatsoever, completely illegal. Roland Dumas, who was the former French foreign minister, he has been quoted in the French press saying that before the Arab Spring started, before the uprisings in Egypt, he was approached by the British to say, we are going to organise an armed uprising in Syria. Do you want to buy into it? So Roland Dumas, the former French foreign minister, is saying that the British approached him and said, we are preparing an armed uprising in Syria before any protests had taken place. Now, if it is the case, and historians will find out, and William Hague will be found out, if it is the case that MI6 were planning an armed uprising in Syria, then all 100,000 deaths so far are actually on the hands of the British government. Not the Assad regime, the British government. And of course, the Kurds that have been driven out of Syria this week have been driven out by the rebels. The Christian community inside Syria is 100% behind Assad. And of course, we've just had all this murderous killing in Egypt this week. When are the SAS going to take on the Egyptian army? When are the RAF going to knock out their tanks like in Libya? Oh, that's not going to happen, is it? That's not going to happen.
Well, 21 minutes ago, Britain believes Syria regime behind chemical attacks, says William Hague.
And they say they're not. And what evidence has William Hague got that the Russians haven't got, that Assad hasn't got?
That's been reported.
If it's proved that the rebels were in fact using chemical weapons, and where did they get those chemical weapons from? Probably from Western intelligence sources. Then, of course, the real criminals are actually found in White House and Downing Street.
William Hague said there was no other plausible explanation that the use of chemical weapons for casualties so intense in a small area on this scale. Russia on Friday, that's today, questioned Western claims that the regime was responsible, saying the incident instead appeared to have been provocative in nature. Hague added, though, that it's our priority at the moment to make sure the UN team can investigate on the ground and establish the facts. If this does not happen, Hague said, Britain would return to the UN Security Council to get a stronger mandate and for the world to speak together more forcibly so that that there can be access. Russia has repeatedly blocked UN Security Council resolutions calling for more action on Syria. So ultimately, this just seems to be, at the moment, a war of words and accusations with no actual evidence. I mean, despite William Hague saying that he believes the Syria regime is behind these chemical attacks, he's got absolutely no evidence to offer there whatsoever.
No, and we've actually got evidence of the rebels using chemical weapons twice already. The Turkish police arrested the al-Nusra Front people inside Turkey. They had a kilogram of sarin. Where did they get that from? From the Israelis? From MI6? From the CIA? It certainly wasn't from Assad, was it? The rebels have been caught out twice using chemical weapons already.
Okay, Martin, about 1,000 people possibly have been killed by this poison gas attack. Mm. I mean, how on earth does anybody... I mean, they've got weapons inspectors in Syria at the moment. How do they go about establishing where this came from? Do these kinds of attacks, does the gas involved in this attack have some kind of signature that can be tested and traced?
Yes, it can. And of course, the rebels had their... Carla Del Ponte, the UN rapporteur on this, they traced the sarin that the rebels were using, and that came from Western sources. So all this stuff about chemical weapons, it's like you accuse people of what you yourself are doing. And I remind you, Roland Dumas, the former French foreign minister, said the British were planning an armed uprising in Syria before the Arab Spring. Now, if MI6 are planning an armed uprising in Syria before the Arab Spring, I want to know who was responsible, because they're going to Nuremberg.
Drive Time on BCFM, 5 till 7 on 93.2 FM.
On a related Middle East story, YouTube are fearful of people awakening, says one analyst. This is this week. A political commentator says YouTube deactivation of Press TV's official page under pressure from the Israeli-American Anti-Defamation League shows that the video sharing site is afraid of people's awareness. Press TV has become essentially the CNN of activists and the persons who do not want to be fed a steady diet of execrable haspara of CIA lies and half-truths, says Randy Short, a member of the Black Autonomy Network organisation. And he told Press TV this in an interview, but of course we're not allowed to see that because Press TV has been banned from the satellites in this part of the world, Martin. Also now it seems under the influence of the Israeli-American Anti-Defamation League, YouTube have now banned several of their channels. I mean, they banned the original one, Press TV Global News. Press TV then set up another one, and now that has also been banned by Google and by the ADL. Are the ADL?
The ADL in the
Anti-Defamation
US.
League.
Yeah, well, they're a pro-Zionist lobby group in the United States. I mean, I think it's extraordinary with the attempt to David Miranda and The Guardian, Press TV, they are rattled because they don't want a counter-narrative to come out. Press TV, of course, have reported extensively that there are two uses of chemical weapons definitely documented in Syria, both by the rebels. Both by the rebels. Where did they get the weaponry from? Well, probably from Western intelligence sources. But that's absolutely proven. We don't know whether Assad did use chemical
weapons
or not.
Just focusing on this business of the YouTube channel being closed down. The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, are saying that this is basically an anti-Semitic channel churning out anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, anti-Israeli propaganda. And it shouldn't be allowed to continue to be broadcast.
Well, that's rubbish. Isn't it? I mean, they just don't want to hear a counter-narrative to their own narrative. Perhaps we should ban Fox News, because that's just propaganda, isn't it? It's just war propaganda, wall-to-wall. I'm sure our ex-SAS friend Ben Griffin will agree with me. Let's ban Fox News. Talk rubbish every day. Let's get them off the air.
Well, we will be hearing a clip from Press TV on this channel later on, although you won't be able to see it, I'm afraid, on yourself on YouTube.
Driving home with BCFM 93.2, the station you can count on.
And moving to Egypt, and Hosni Mubarak is to be freed as the army tightens its grip on Egypt. Martin, seems like we've recycled back to before the Arab Spring. I mean, he's not the president, but he's been freed, Hosni Mubarak, who was the president who'd been in charge, basically a dictatorship, for many, many years before the first democratic elections there.
That's right, and the Egyptian army have been murdering hundreds and hundreds of people. They've probably murdered more people in Egypt in the last week than were murdered at the beginning of the phases of the war in Syria or the war in Libya. And, of course, using William Hague's logic, it's perfectly legitimate for the ordinary folk of Egypt to pick up the gun and start fighting their own army, just as the people in Syria, like the Free Syrian Army, the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. Maybe it's time for a war in Syria. Of course, let's start fighting the Syrian army, let's start fighting the Egyptian army, and, of course, the RAF, like in Libya, will send in their guys to knock out the tanks. Because, of course, we've got to fight, haven't we? That's the only way. The only change can only come through rebellion and war. And, of course, as Roland Dumas, I'll say it for the third time, Roland Dumas, the former French foreign minister, said he was approached by the British at a meeting before the Arab Spring, saying, "We're going to have an armed uprising in Syria. Do you want to buy into it?" If it proves to be the case that the British and the Americans fomented an armed uprising in Syria, they are the war criminals. Nothing else.
Drive Time on BCFM 93.2.
Also in the Middle East, stepped-up US drone strikes in Yemen have been sparking massive protests. Again, well, really, Yemen has been sort of off the radar, Martin, hasn't it? Mm. But apart from announcements
of
embassy
closures. We're not supposed to care about.
Embassy closures a few weeks ago. Thousands have taken to the streets in Yemen to protest the deadly US drone strikes, which killed dozens of people over the last 2 weeks. Critics say Washington's secretive policy is only pushing Yemenis to favour radical groups. Anti-US demonstration held in several cities across Yemen. The Yemeni capital Sana'a on Saturday saw crowds of chanting protesters outraged by the American policy of targeted killings. Now, Martin, I do wonder, don't the Americans think to themselves, if they're going to be killing innocent people with drones, obviously these are suspects, some of them have done nothing wrong, some of them are suspects, but then there's also a lot of innocent people caught up in this, sometimes wedding parties, funerals, this kind of thing, innocent people being killed by these drone strikes. Don't the Americans think to themselves, well, actually, this might radicalise people and persuade them to pick up guns against us?
Well, then, of course, you've got an excuse to intervene to deal with the people who pick up the guns. I'll just make this point about drone strikes in Yemen. Totally illegal. Totally illegal. You're not under international law allowed to go into somebody else's country using an unmanned vehicle and kill random people. There's no legal basis for that whatsoever. And I say to those who are actually sending the drones in, there's no legal basis for what you're doing whatsoever. You are murderers in common law, and ultimately you are going to be punished.
Now, on to what I was talking about a little bit earlier, which is our band session, Press TV. And Israel has already launched several unprovoked attacks on Syria. Martin, you touched on this right at the start of the hour. US intelligence service linguist Scott Rickard now has been talking to the English language channel Press TV. And this is what he had to say. I mean, it's one of the things that fascinates me, is a lot of these people are retired or former intelligence people in this country. We're hearing from them via Press TV. But we're not hearing about them, or we're not hearing their words and their information on our mainstream media here in this country anymore.
Well, basically, we need to know what the Iranians are thinking. Press TV is there to let us know. Why don't we want to hear them? What's that about?
Okay, well, let's hear from them now.
Israel has been incredibly involved already in the attacks, unprovoked and the illegal attacks on Syria. These attacks are enabled, encouraged, and celebrated by the West, NATO, and their Persian Gulf allies. Once again, no condemnation for the three major attacks by air and by sea by Israel on Syria, which were incredibly unprovoked. And to say these are for weapons of mass destruction, or these are for weapons, the chemical weapons. I mean, my God, Syria has had chemical weapons for decades and has never fired them on Israel or any other nation. So these are incredibly unprovoked attacks. They're criminal. Israel should be held in criminal court for these attacks. And unfortunately, they're doing them for proxy. They're proxying out the wars for the West and their allies. The insurgents are being wiped out by Assad for a couple of reasons. Assad's been very successful at attacking the foreign intervention, but at the same time, these unprovoked attacks are going after strategic weapons that could aid in the defense against a NATO and Israeli attack on Syria. So I believe that these are just precursors to an all-out war and attack against Syria, and they're just basically taking out strategic weapons.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what's fairly clear is what's happened is, as I said, I'll repeat it for the fourth time, Roland Dumas, the former French foreign minister, said the British were preparing an armed uprising in Syria before the Arab Spring. Now, if we find out that that is the case, that the rebels inside Syria were being trained and directed by British special forces and things of that sort, then of course, what we're dealing with here isn't a spontaneous uprising which is being repressed by Assad. We're dealing with an armed rebellion supported by Western intelligence services. And, of course, this is criminal behaviour.
Well, another person, it's not just Scott Rickard, the former linguist in the American intelligence services that we haven't been hearing from. Another person we haven't heard from is someone called Sean Stone. He's the son of Oliver Stone, the film director, and he spoke to Abby Martin, who's a very feisty presenter on Russia Today, who does a fairly regular programme on there, and is really now talking about debunking the myths about Iran and Israel, because I wonder what your thoughts are on this, Martin. The Israel-Palestine conflict and the fact that Israel seems to be so wedded to ideas connected with Britain and the British government, US and the US government, and also that the three countries, Israel, America and the UK, are all very much into this idea of drones. They're all very, very into these illegal drone strikes.
Well, I mean, George Bush mentioned something called the Axis of Evil. But of course, the real axis of evil, and many people in the world see it like this, I'm afraid, the real axis of evil is US, Israel, Britain.
Well, let's see what Sean Stone, Oliver Stone's son, has to say about myths on Iran and Israel.
I was raised part Jewish. My dad's side is half Jewish. But frankly, my father is a Buddhist and doesn't feel, you know, any real attachment to the Jewish faith. I was raised with a mixture, in a sense, because I was baptized Christian. I studied the Old Testament and New Testament as a kid, especially in school. And then, you know, post 9/11, I became curious about Islam because I wanted to see the other side's point of view. But, frankly, from the Western side, it seemed that Islam was a fanatical religion, and yet I never judge a book by the cover. I want to actually read the Quran and understand it. And in the course of then journeying to places like the West Bank with my father in 2002, and then traveling to Somalia by myself, all these, you know, these trips ultimately leading to Iran in 2011, all these trips really opened my eyes to the Islamic world, and I saw Islam as a continuation of the Judeo-Christian tradition. I see it, you know, very much for the Prophet Muhammad as the last prophet in that lineage. And the Quran is a very sensible book. If you read it, frankly, it makes a whole lot of sense regarding their interpretation of Jesus, whom they look as a prophet, and obviously the Abrahamic lineage from Abraham to Moses are all very much respected in the Quran.
Well, a very different attitude, isn't it? And he's almost basically taking on a lot of Islamic ideas, Martin, Sean Stone. I mean, his father, Oliver Stone, is a very influential filmmaker, but we haven't heard so much about him. What do you think about that? What he's saying there about actually Judaism, Islam and Christianity being very, very close?
Well, they are. I mean, anybody who knows anything about religious affairs knows that the three religions are interrelated.
But, I mean, we know what's going on in the Middle East does appear, certainly on the surface, to be a clash between Islam and Judaism. You know, Islam by the Islamic world and Israel representing Judaism.
Well, what you've got in the Middle East is a very, very complex situation. You've got the Alevi believers in Syria, which are Assad's and Alevi. They're a version of Shia Islam. You've got mainstream 12 of Shiism in Iran. You've got various strands of Sunni belief, including the more extreme Salafi and Takfiri groups based in Saudi Arabia. The world's a complicated place. It always was. It still is.
And what about Israel? I mean, some people see Zionism and crusading as a part of Christianity.
Well, people are always making excuses.
I mean,
we had
the Crusades, didn't we, back in medieval times? Yeah. How does it fit in with that?
Well, I mean, what is really going on is a power play for resources and position. It's like a game of risk. And the Western powers and the Israelis are encouraging as much kind of conflict in the Arab world as possible, in the Muslim world, because they've managed to have their Islamic countries on top of our oil. And of course, we've got to get our hands on that. And that's why we've invaded Iraq. That's why we're possibly going to invade Iraq.
It's a bit naughty calling it our oil. Anyway, here's Sean Stone.
Who else is it?
Here's Sean Stone on Israel as the Crusader state.
There's a lot of conflict internally, and there always has been, frankly, in Israel. There's always been a large conflict between the European settlers and, coming from different parts of Europe, not feeling comfortable in this, you know, in what is historically Palestine. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of internal issues, and that's why, you know, it's ironic that Netanyahu is actually an American guy who's now the Prime Minister of Israel, just to show you that the reason why a lot of Middle Easterners object to Israel's existence is that historically they look at it as a crusader state, a crusader kingdom, because it's the exact same location that the Europeans established their crusader kingdom 1,000 years ago. And so when they see all these European, Russian Jews, coming into Israel, they're saying, look at these European settlers. They're not Jews from from this region. They have no ties to the land. They're coming here to settle. And that's their the Middle Eastern point of view as far as why they object to it. Now, I'm not a proponent of attacking Israel or trying to dissolve it at this point, but I'm simply saying that is why there's so much antagonism to Israel, is that they look at it historically as a continuation of this European encroachment upon the Middle East.
Well, this is a view we're not really seeing very much in the Western world, certainly in the mainstream press, Martin. Indeed, there was a documentary scheduled to go out on BBC 4 a couple of months ago on this very subject of the history, whether Israel is a crusader state, whether, this is some kind of throwback to medieval times, and yet it was banned.
Well, the Israelis leaned very heavily on the BBC not to show
the film. Well, the BBC pulled it at the last minute.
Yeah, and it was actually made by an Israeli historian, pointing out that in actual fact, but paradoxically enough, who is descended from the original Jewish inhabitants of the Palestine, it's probably the Palestinians who converted to Islam a few hundred years ago, but they are in fact probably the original Jews.
So if the European Jews have a right to return to Israel, and did have after World War II, did the Palestinians now also have a right to return?
Well, what we've got to do is find some way of compromising so that we don't end up killing each other. It's a bit difficult, but it's got to happen. It's got to happen in Sri Lanka. It's got to happen in Israel. It's happened in Ireland, thankfully. That's the way you deal with things. Talk. Peace.
BCFM 93.2. Bristol is our community.
I'm going to stand until I can't stand no more if I have to stand by myself.
The American people are the last people to wake up.
Prisons are becoming an integral part of the U.S. economy.
People of color organize critical thinking, strategic work,
and direct action for social, racial, gender, and economic justice.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
People of Color Organized features intersections of race, politics, feminism, movement, class, internationalism, and theory.
This is about the Black Panthers. This is about the American Indian movement. This is about all of us.
Visit us online at peopleofcolororganized.com. Follow us on Twitter at POC Organized and Facebook at facebook.com/peopleofcolororganized. You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
Go on, chillin. That's what we're talking about. We need a little help. Can't do this y'all alone. Thank God for this. Yeah. James Brown, y'all. Yes, this your evening. One more time. We're ask one of chillin for get up. Get into it. Get involved. Oh, Hunter Children, when I have to come down here to the Gullah Geechee Nation, and so glad that Hunter to tune in to we Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio Station. Hunter Children, no, this year the head from the body of this year nation and the horse of we station. Queen Quest, come on, Children, get involved, get involved, get involved to the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition, the sponsor of this year radio station. Hunter Children, this year the we show, Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio. Come on, y'all.
This is Radio Anglo-Indian. Anglo-Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
At vast public expense to recall the House of Commons to decide that we're actually going to decide on this matter next week or the week after when we're back here. In any case, it's absolutely evident that if it were not for the democratic revolt which has been underway in this House of Commons and outside in the wider public against this war, that the engines in Cyprus would now be revving and the cruise missiles ready to fly this very weekend. And any attempt by the Prime Minister to pretend that he had always, all along, intended on this course of action is just bunkum. And the reason for the unease here on both sides of the House, two exceptional speeches from the last speaker and the member from New Forest East, encompassed the feelings of the people in the country. Only 11% of the public, according to the Daily Telegraph this morning, support Britain becoming involved in a war in Syria. Can ever a British government have imagined sending its men and women to war with the support of just 11% in public opinion? First, that there is no compelling evidence, to use the Leader of the Opposition's words, that the Assad regime is responsible for this crime, yet. Not that they are not bad enough to do it, Mr. Speaker. Everybody knows they're bad enough to do it. The question is, are they mad enough to do it? To launch a chemical weapons attack in Damascus on the very day that a United Nations chemical weapons inspection team arrives in Damascus must be a new definition of madness. And of course, if he is that mad, how mad is he going to be once we've launched a blizzard of Tomahawk cruise missiles upon his country? Now, as I heard the front bench describe how bad he was, I wonder just why the former Prime Minister forced Her Majesty to billet him in her guest room at Buckingham Palace just a few years ago, and how a former Prime Minister recommended him for an honour, and how he was hailed on all corners as a moderniser. But of course the narrative has changed, because the government is intent on regime change in Damascus. Which brings me to the only other point I'm going to be able to make in the time available. The reason for the unease is that people can see the character of the Syrian opposition. They have seen the videos. We've heard about horrific videos. Take a look at the video of one of the commanders of the Syrian revolution cutting open the chest of a human being and eating his heart and liver and videotaping himself and putting it up on YouTube because he thought it might be considered attractive. Take a look at the videos of Christian priests having their heads sawn off, not chopped off, sawn off with bread knives. Even a bishop in the Christian church was murdered by these people. Every religious minority in Syria, and there are 23 of those, is petrified at the victory of the Syrian rebels that the British Prime Minister and Foreign Secretary have been doing their utmost to supply with weapons and money these last 2 years, and they cannot deny it. They say it's now about this crime, whoever committed it. But it's been the government's policy for 2 years to bring about the defeat of the regime in Damascus and the victory of the kind of people responsible for these crimes. I have 20 seconds left. Willingly.
If only for another 60 seconds. Remember, the honourable member had made reference, but let's remember where those arms have come from over decades from this country's supply to Syria.
Indeed, indeed. I have now 60 seconds at my disposal, so let me make this point more clearly. When did Russia and China, 2.5 billion people, cease to be members of the international community? Who are you on the other side to decide what the international community thinks should do? If you're unable to persuade the Security Council to go along with your point of view, who are you to decide that you will launch a war in any case? I keep hearing about the unreasonable use of the veto. I've heard that many times over the last few years in this House. The United States has vetoed every attempt to obtain justice for the Palestinian people and to punish and issue retribution for international lawbreaking on the part of Israel, and nobody in this House has said one word about it. Yes, I give way.
Very grateful for the honourable member for giving way to me. Mr. Speaker, I think you'll be very interested to know that I heard several constituents email me about comments made by the honourable member for Bradford West on Iranian Press TV, in which my constituent claims that the honourable member said that Israel supplied the chemical for the attacks in Syria. I would find that very hard to believe that the honourable member said that. So would you like to take this opportunity to refute that provide the evidence to satisfy my constituent?
Well, it just shows the unreliability of relying upon green ink letters, whether they come in the post or in emails. For I said no such thing. But the Syrian rebels definitely had sarin gas, because they were caught with it by the Turkish government, as was referred to by the former government minister opposite. if you'll forgive me, I forget his constituents. See, the truth is this. I know mine, it's where I gave you such a bloody good hiding just over a year ago. The Syrian rebels have got plenty of access to sarin. It's not rocket science, Mr. Speaker. A group of Shinto obscurantists in Japan living on Mount Fuji poisoned the Tokyo underground with sarin gas less than 20 years ago. You don't have to be Einstein to have your hands on sarin gas or the means to distribute it. Russia and China say no to war. So do I and most people in this country.
There's a flag in every window, in every car, in every store, and they're all reminding me it's a new war. The president says I'm even helping out if I shop and do some chores, but I don't want to help in any way. In the new war. Keep an eye on strangers. The strangers keep an eye on you. Paranoia. That's not new.